Hey guys, welcome back to another Tuesday night of U.S. Paranormal. Tonight we're talking about demonology, Dybbuk's. Actually, we may skip Dybbuk's with Aaron being gone, and just malicious spirit and knowing the difference between the two. Our first guest tonight, we have two guests tonight, two amazing guests. We have Bishop James Long, and then at halftime we'll have Coyote Chris Sutton joining us. So make sure you don't skip out or leave on us because we're going to have like I said, two amazing guests. So Bishop Long, thank you for joining us tonight. I appreciate you taking out the time to join us and answer some questions that, you know, people in chat may have and that we have, and just to educate people.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me on.
So, Bishop Long, I have a question for you. You know, talking about demons and malicious spirits and things like that, where do they come from? I mean, what is your opinion or proof or whatever? Where do they come from?
Yeah, you know, that's one of the things is when you understand, of course, I focus heavily on theology. And people are always asking me about angels and what are they, and are they evil people, or are they, you know, offspring of angels and humans, and it goes on and on and on. So there's all kinds of things that people ask as far as my take on demons. The fact of the matter is I personally believe, I don't think they're spirits of deceased evil people. So that's one mm-hmm. thing, and I can on a theological level I could explain that even more so. But they're two different essences. Your human beings and angels are not the same. There's, you know, right. some theory that it's a pre-Adam race that existed before Adam. Again, there's nothing biblically at all that would explain that. The offspring of angels and women, I completely disagree with that at all. And people mention Nephilim. And really, if you look at the actual proper translation, it means fierce warriors. It does not mean, mm-hmm. you know, huge giants or offspring of angels. So the translation is incorrect. And I believe personally they're fallen, but unconfined angels. So when Lucifer mm-hmm. rebelled against God, he fell from his place of prominence and led with a whole host of lower-ranking angels. So that is what I believe.
So when you say right. they fell, because that was actually going to be one of my questions, are demons fallen angels? So you're mm-hmm. saying they are, in fact.
Most certainly.
Because
we know that, and see, the thing is we know that heaven has to exist. We know that free will has to exist in heaven. We know this because angels freely chose to fall. So therefore, free will must exist. And that is one of the reasons why people ask all the time, why do spirits remain on earth? Well, because we're not forced into heaven. Because if we were forced into heaven, then that would violate our free will. Well, our free will still exists even after we die.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not a computer. We're not programmed saying this is what you must believe and that's the way it's going to be, especially if you die. I don't believe so. I think heaven is presented to us, and that is why human spirits remain, because they choose, for whatever reason, not to progress. Perhaps they're afraid. Perhaps they're attached.
Mm-hmm.
Unfinished business, whatever it might be. But I certainly think it's presented, but I don't think heaven is forced.
Right. Now, are all malicious spirits out there, are they all evil spirits? Are they all demons?
Well, malicious by their nature are evil. But now, spirits and demons are two completely different things. They're not the same thing. A mm-hmm. human spirit, human soul, a person, if you will, is a human being, a person that existed in human form with a mm-hmm. body and soul. They leave, and they can, in fact, be malicious. But we have to figure out what's going on behind the intent. But a demonic
right.
entity is not the same as a human spirit. They're completely two. It is apples and oranges. Apples and oranges.
Mm-hmm.
And so a demonic entity possesses a body, will attack the body. So there's a difference with the intent. For example, a malevolent human spirit may attack a person because the intent is to hurt the person for whatever reason.
Mm-hmm.
A demonic entity causes infestation and possession. The intent is not necessarily the person. The intent is to hurt God. And
right.
how they hurt God is by hurting the ones he loves most. That's why you
have to. That's interesting.
So my question is, starting kind of with the definition, but then expanding upon, who is Satan and how much power does Satan actually possess?
Well, that's a million-dollar question when you talk about who is Satan. As far as, you know, speaking theologically, Lucifer and Satan really, and the devil, they're the same individual. And we can talk about that if you want to as far as identification, because it really is all about identification. It's the way you think about them. Lucifer
okay.
refers to his angel self. And Lucifer
okay.
was a beautiful angel. It means light, because he was,
uh-huh.
in fact, the most powerful of all angels. So Lucifer actually is a light bearer. The devil refers to his evil being, his existence. And
uh-huh.
Satan refers to the concept that he is evil. And he and his title is the Prince of Darkness, as an opposite of Jesus. So that's the Lucifer refers to his angel self. The devil refers to his evil being. And the existence of Satan refers to the concept that he is evil. So, for example, let me break it down even easier for you. Because people are saying, okay, that's just too confusing. That's too deep, too philosophical. It really isn't. James Long, I am a bishop. I'm a brother, and I'm also an uncle.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it doesn't change who I am, which is James Long. I'm still a brother. I'm still an uncle. I'm still a bishop. But there's three different titles, three different relationships that I have. It's the same thing with Lucifer. Lucifer
okay.
and the devil is, again, refers to his evil being. That's his relationship with us as the devil. And Satan refers to the concept that he is evil, the opposite of Christ. It's still Lucifer. It's still the same principle.
So it's all kind of one and the same, in a sense.
It's
okay.
relationships. It explains the relationship
right.
of Lucifer himself. Yeah, but it's the same identity,
right.
same creature.
Okay. Well, I'm really glad that you broke that down, because I personally did not understand all those differences. I had some questions, because I hear Christians always say, can a Christian be demon-possessed? Because they'll say, well, if I don't believe in demons and I don't believe in that, there's no way I can be possessed. Like, what would your response be to that?
I would say, that's argumentum ad ignoratium. That's argument from ignorance. And
yeah.
logic 101, that's basic logic one, it says, there is no proof that aliens exist, therefore they don't. That's argumentum ad ignoratium, which
right.
ultimately it states that just because there's no proof, that doesn't mean they do not exist. Now, with demons, there is absolute proof. There is no question at all. You simply cannot dispute it. Anyone who disputes it is disputing it based on their opinion. I am presenting facts.
Right.
I don't get paid for this ministry. There's nothing. I mean, I receive no income for it, so there'd be no reason or there's no justification for me to lie about what I have seen. And so,
right.
therefore, what I tell people is, in fact, demons most certainly 100% exist. There's no question about that at all. And a Christian can most certainly be possessed. Emily Rose, or Annalise Mikkel is her name, we know her as Emily Rose's story. She was, in fact, no, I have no question she was possessed. I've read the entire transcripts of the reports of the trial. I've read everything. There's no question
mm-hmm.
based on what I've seen she's possessed. But she was a very devout, she was a very Catholic. So she was certainly Christian and incredibly devout. So the idea to say that Christians cannot be possessed is arrogance. And very dangerous, and that's pride.
Yeah.
And
right.
Because you can be a Christian. If you walk into a place that's demonically infested and you go provoking, I will guarantee you walk out with an attachment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it seems
right.
like when I investigate locations, the ones you walk into that have, 50 million crosses, like, spread across the whole place, I mean, those are, like, where you find the most activity. It's like they swear they're protected by all these crosses, and you know what I mean? But it's kind of like that ignorance like you were referring to. They think, okay, as long as I have all this protection and I'm a Christian, and of course protection does play into it, in my opinion, you know, having your faith and all, but like you said, you can't be ignorant to the fact that it just can't happen.
Well,
but
keep
I have
this in mind, and on a theology level, on a theological level, you have to keep this in mind too. If you are a Christian and you're going to a place and you are provoking, you are putting the Lord your God to test. Because you are immediately assuming that based on the fact that you are a Christian, that you will not be possessed. So you are violating one of the commandments in the first place.
Right.
So anyone who says, well, I'm a Christian and that's all there is to it, and but you're putting the Lord your God to test, and so therefore what are you doing here?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so just because you say you're a Christian, and if you go and you still provoke, I promise you, you'll hear the flap of the wing of the devil.
No.
Well,
and
then I have something that I wanted. Okay, go ahead,
you
Lisa.
You hit yours first, because mine's really kind of random.
Okay. There are some that I have seen, some paranormal groups that will go into a place, and they automatically, when they feel the a presence of evil, they automatically say that it's Satan, or if a word comes over the ovulus or whatever, and it says Satan, and they're just like, oh, it's him, it's Satan. I, for one, don't necessarily agree with that, because for one thing, he's not omnipresent. And another thing, I believe that he sends his demons out to do his bidding. And sometimes I think that a lot of that is just feeling and psychosomatic. But what do you think about that?
Yeah, you know, anybody who goes and tells me, oh, my gosh, I've done all these demonic infestations and all this, and I just scratch my head and quietly I say, okay, there we go, one of these people. First of all, if every place that I investigated was demonic in nature, then I would never have any free time at all, none, zero, because I would be constantly be doing exorcisms 24/7.
Most of the time, I can
debunk what's going on in the house. That's what I try to do. That's my goal. When I go into a home, I don't care anything. I don't care if they told me that they saw a TV being thrown across the room. If I didn't see it, it didn't happen. Because I can't tell you how many times I've walked in someone's home and they said, oh, my gosh, we got, they're banging on the wall so badly. They're breaking the walls and putting holes in the walls. And I show up and there's no holes in the walls at all. Nothing whatsoever. None. And then so we do more investigation. I find out, okay, your pipe is rattling and it's on the wall and it's hitting the 2x4. That's your problem. That's what you're hearing. So that's, 9 times out of 10, that is what will happen.
That kind of leads me to a question that I had for you about distinguishing psychological disorders from demon possession. As a church, and like when you get called in, do you have mental evaluations done on these people, or do you just kind of look at their medication list, or how do you distinguish that psychological versus, this is a true demon possession? And if it's possibly a demonic possession, 'cause, two-part question, how much proof do you need because I've heard it takes extensive proof to get a church to go out and actually do an exorcism. How much proof would be needed?
Well, yes, I'll answer your questions here. Number one, I absolutely require psychological evaluation. That is not optional under no circumstances, because someone who has a dissociative personality disorder, which is multiple personality, or someone who is paranoid schizophrenic, you can put them in a paranoid state and they can commit suicide. So you see all these, hooligans running around playing exorcist and having absolutely no psychological evaluation and have no training whatsoever in psychology, none, zero. They could be performing an exorcism on someone who has a disorder that could cause them to be in a manic state, and then they would be held for manslaughter. So the paranormal community needs to wake up. This is not something you ever do because you think you are called to be an exorcist. Because one day, if you think you're called to be an exorcist without having the insurance behind you, without having attorneys, without having the church declaring, yes, this person is, and having proof that, in fact, this happened, then you will find yourself in prison. So let's make no mistake about that. That's number one. Number two, you, before anything else, you don't harm the individual. That infuriates me when people go out and play exorcism and they scare people and immediately tell people they have a demon in their home. You know, so they have to have a psychological evaluation. I want to know every medication that they're on. I have to speak to their doctor and get permission from them to speak to their doctor. I have to know if performing a ritual on this individual will cause long-term psychological damage. I have to know this. I have to know their medical history. Do they have a weak heart? Do they have a history of strokes? A person who is possessed could easily go in cardiac arrest and certainly a stroke. Again, these are all legal issues that you must deal with performing an exorcism. I have someone trained in the medical field. They are monitoring a person's vitals throughout an exorcism in which I perform. So we have to be very, very careful about who we say yes. We affirm this person is dealing with a spiritual issue that's causing, obviously, possession. Look, a person who is possessed is completely different than a person who is psychologically ill. They're not the same thing. A person who is psychologically ill cannot levitate. A person who is psychologically ill cannot have the knowledge of languages in which they've never known. A person who is psychologically ill cannot tell you your sins in the middle of a ritual. A person who is psychological cannot tell, I'll say, Abun Dabshmaya Makara Shamuk, and I'm praying the Our Father in Aramaic, and it will speak backwards in Aramaic as a form of mockery. That is not a psychological evaluation. So understand that by the time I get involved, there is no doubt, none whatsoever, that we're dealing with an exorcism, a true possession, rather than a psychological evaluation.
Right. Well, now, here's a question. How does one know if they are possessed or oppressed or in need of an exorcism? Will they know it?
Yeah, it's a great question, but when you're dealing with possession, so first of all, it starts with an infestation, oppression, possession. Now, we all know that, but when you have to understand oppression. People just throw the word oppression around, and they don't really go deep into what actually occurs. When you are dealing in an oppressed state, and a demonic entity is, in fact, oppressing you, here's what this means. That means a demonic entity is destroying your intellect and will. So you truly think you're going crazy. You are seeing things. You are hearing things. It will tell you you're stupid. It will tell you that no one loves you. It will try to push you away from the very foundation, the support that you need, your family. So you literally think you are going crazy. Now, your will, it is constantly attacking your sleep. It attacks everything in your life, every possible thing, to the point where you can't fight anymore. Now,
it wears you down.
It wears you down. You literally can't fight anymore. You surrender. And when you think about that, that is a person. Now, just listen to these words carefully. That is a person who has given up complete hope. They've given up complete hope. They're hopeless. They feel completely, totally, completely hopeless.
Right.
And so that person gives up. They can't fight. And then your intellect and will has been eradicated, and that is when possession takes over.
That is just really, really interesting. Well, do you have anything that you can share with us? For example, like an exorcism that you've been on, is there anything that you can share with us, a story or whatever?
Yeah, you know, I've done 27 actual exorcisms on individuals who've been possessed over 15 years now. That's people who are validly possessed, really, truly possessed, no question. Now, I've done a lot of minor rite of exorcisms. That's when I go into a home, it is demonically infested, and it is attacking and causing havoc on the family. I've done quite a few of them. Now, that's different than possession. So understand that. I will tell you, yes, there was one story that, you know, it bothers me even today because it involved a 68-year-old woman. She was wonderful. She's like her grandma. You know, she would do anything, anything in the world for you. She was just the sweetest human being ever. and she was being attacked by an incubus and succubus case. Incubus and succubus are demonic entities that attack you on a sexual nature. Now, there is no actual act of sex. It is a manipulation of the muscles. And when I got involved with the case, her doctor and with her family contacted me and said, we have no idea. I do not have a scientific explanation what's going on because she was ripped apart in her private area as well as her anal area. So what it had done is it manipulate the muscles to such severity that it caused it to be a rip. The doctor could see the rip, but he didn't understand the cause of what happened, of both. So I got involved with that case, and she would explain
That's
to me
sad.
That they would attack her on a sexual nature. She would say that she was laying on the bed, and she described them as bedwalkers. And it was, she said there were three of them. And she is like 10-pound dogs. She clearly felt them walking towards her. And we actually have a video. We're the only team in the entire world that has a video of an incubus actually in the bed with her as it was getting ready to grab her legs and hold her down. The bed sheets rise and it falls, and it rises way up and it falls again. And we have absolute proof without question that there was something in that bed with her.
Wow.
Now, wow.
That's amazing.
When it comes to exorcisms, how long do they actually last? I mean, are they painful? I'm assuming they're painful. What's the process of that?
Well, the person who's actually possessed actually has been – the reports are, the data shows that they go into almost a dream state when the actual possession takes place. They understand the intellect and the will. They remember that. They can recall that, those things. But as far as the actual possession, where the person has completely been taken over by a demonic entity, they describe it as almost like going into a dream state. They don't really remember much at all. And as far as the, you know, exorcism is concerned, that it could take hours, it could take years. So it really just depends on the case itself. It's not something that once you say yes, and that's why the church is so careful about accepting and saying, okay, we affirm this individual has, in fact, a demonic issue. We have to be very, because we have to see it through. It's not something that we can just simply. That's why, and what's very important is the person has to have ongoing spiritual help as well after, and psychological help after, because the person, remember, their intellect and will has been eradicated. So we're talking about a process to the point where they're very weak and probably incredibly dehydrated, and they just simply can't fight. So most of the time, they are sent to the hospital for liquids, for fluids. To be checked out for the heart monitor, et cetera.
Now, how prevalent would you say like demonic activity is in the world today? Because I think sometimes it seems like it's over. I don't know what the word is. Every investigator is like, oh, it's demonic, and I have no doubt that there's a lot of cases, but. Is there any idea or statistics as to how prevalent it really is?
Yeah, over 15 years I've been collecting data. I have a master's of education, and data is very important, especially when you're in education. You collect data for a variety of reasons and reports. And I have collected this data through all my cases that I have done. I have not seen an increase in demonic possession. There has been no increase whatsoever. I have seen an increase of reported demonic activity in the home that turned out to be poltergeist activity and not demonic in nature at all. There has been an increase in false reporting, but the reporting, the activity is very similar to demonic activity infestation. So I have seen an increase in that, but when we investigate the cases and we go further into cases, I have found that those cases were 80% more prone to be poltergeist, whereas only the 10% or so were legitimate. And the other, of course, 10% was false. It was just simple, not true. So all the activity I have seen that were valid and we continue to investigate, then that's how it broke down. So we are seeing an increase in poltergeist activity, but we're not seeing an increase in demonic activity. I am not seeing it.
Okay. Well, Bishop, Victor Furman is asking a question on our chat, and he asks, there are references to demons in almost every religion and culture, examples like Kali in Hinduism, the Jinn in Islam. Do you see these as deriving from the same source?
And that's a great question, and the answer is no. And the reason being is a demonic entity will have an extreme aversion to religious objects, for example, a crucifix or a relic. I have a relic of Saint Anthony. So I actually have a relic, a first-class relic, a bone, or holy water, the Eucharist. It is such an extreme, violent aversion. Whereas I have had cases of other issues of other demonic, quote-unquote, demonic entities in other faiths in which those aversions were not present. And so, therefore, I would have to say no to that, because there's a very clear, at least from my data, that shows that, and I've had several. I've had probably, I'd say, 10 to 15, where they were, some were Buddhist and some were Hindu, I've had a Muslim, and Jewish, where, in fact, there was no aversion. I got no reaction whatsoever. And now we're talking about demonic infestation. So there's clearly a difference there. And,
yeah,
you know, that's a big theological discussion to have, but that is at least what I have found.
Yeah, I hear with Jewish, they have dibbiks is what their
mm-hmm.
belief is. There's another question in chat, and it says, are you familiar with sleep paralysis? And I don't know.
Oh, yes.
They were saying, you know, they didn't know if that was related to the demonic or malicious spirit, and how that would play or tie into that, if anything.
That's a great, great question. Sleep paralysis is absolutely something that people really do need to dive more into. And it's very interesting, because I've done reports on sleep paralysis, and, boy, we could do a whole show on sleep paralysis. I mean, there's so much information on it, because people are – they feel like they're being tied down. They, you know, they can't move. It's the old hag syndrome, where they're either going to sleep or they're just waking up. I have found that – okay – there are two types. When you're dealing with sleep paralysis, there is isolated sleep paralysis and recurrent isolated sleep paralysis. There are two different things. ISP, which is isolated sleep paralysis, is much more common than recurrent isolated sleep paralysis. They're not the same. So, for example, ISP episodes are infrequent, and they're usually short, approximately 1 minute. That is primarily what people get with the old hag syndrome. They can't move. They just wake up. Their consciousness is now taking over their subconscious. They awake immediately in a dream state, in a subconscious state, and their conscious is now becoming more in control of the mind. So they can't move. They're stuck. That is a short duration. But in RISP, episodes can last for up to an hour or longer. So there's a big difference between the two. And so maybe next time, you know, we can talk a little bit about that. A lot of RISPs are out-of-body experiences. So we are finding that out-of-body experiences are very, very connected to recurrent isolated sleep paralysis.
Well, I have one last question for you before we let you go, because we're coming up to the halfway mark, and then we're going to take a quick five-minute break, 3 to 5 minutes, depending on the song, and come back with Coyote Chris Sutton for his take on all this. But I was curious if you offer courses or you mentor or do anything like that for those that are interested in it, because you do have a wealth of knowledge, and I think it's something that needs to be shared and people need to understand. I mean, I see so many people practicing that should honestly not be practicing.
I really appreciate the question, and actually I do. If you go to Bishop James Long, LONG, so bishopjameslong.com, there's a new course. If you click on new course, I actually have four classes in this new course. It is angelology, which is desperately needed in the paranormal. An angelology course, a demonology course, a paranormal studies course, and a paranormal genealogy course. I mean, we're talking, there's a lot of information, a tremendous amount of information that goes into these four courses. So it's bishopjameslong.com and click on new course. And what's even better is the funds, 100% of the funds goes to my homeless ministry. One of the things that I'm very devoted, is I go to homeless camps. I've been doing that for 15 years. And I will pass out clothing and food and sleeping bags and tents and food. There's all kinds of things that they need. And so the funds go to helping me do that. So, yeah, please, every paranormal group should take this course. I firmly believe this because they are going to get a strong education in paranormal studies,
absolutely,
angelology, and demonology.
Absolutely. So those of you that are listening in chat, we'll post that website in chat so that you can go to that. I believe you said it was bishoplong.com, the four courses.
No. Bishop James Long.
I'm sorry. Bishopjameslong.com. But we'll get that posted for you in there. We're going to go ahead and take that break. And I really appreciate you spending that time with us. And then when we come back, we're going to welcome Coyote Chris Sutton. Thanks again, Bishop Long, for being with us tonight. I really, really do appreciate your time.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Bye-bye.
Okay. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye. Okay, and we're going to go out with Jordan Lee and the Revelry. It's called Ghost Town. Very appropriate. It's a 5-minute song. We'll be back in 5 minutes with Coyote Chris Sutton.
It ain't the falling down to getting back up. It's hard these days. You can wait for that sunrise. Everyone knows that there's an end to this night. So open up your bloodshot eyes to get up off.
Paranormal. If you're just now joining us, we've been talking about demonology, malicious spirits. We had started out with Bishop James Long, had an amazing chat. He is just so full of knowledge. Amazing. And we have another amazing guest joining us. I can't wait to jump into. We have Coyote Chris Sutton. Thank you for joining us, and thank you for waiting through the song and the break. How are you tonight?
Hey, that was a great song. I love that song. That was great.
Thank you.
So wasn't a bad weight whatsoever. Oh, it's I'm doing very well, thank you.
Yeah.
It's great to be on with you guys.
A couple of little local, you know, up-and-coming bands that like to send me music to play on the show, so it's kind of nice. And
cool.
He called it Ghost Town. So I'm like, well, that's what's more appropriate.
That is appropriate.
Yeah, so where to start with questions for you. Star, did you have anything you want to start with, or you want me to hit him first?
No, you go ahead and hit him first. Just
okay.
Don't hurt him too bad.
I was going to say, we start with, we'll say hit him. Thank God. I'm
hit
glad
him.
You're in Texas,
I know.
In Illinois.
You know, we started these sound effects, Chris, since I talked to you last on our show. All these, we have downloaded like ghost, creaky doors and ghostly sounds and stuff, but I wasn't sure about using those with Bishop Long. Now, we might have to throw a few in there with you if it's appropriate. If it's appropriate, because we've known each other for some time now.
Yes, I'm okay
but
with it.
But let's see. And some of the questions may be somewhat similar because it's obviously the same topic. But with you, so being a shaman, you know, I personally, in researching it, had a hard time finding your beliefs as a shaman in relation to demons. So I guess, like, my number one question was, do you believe demons can take any shape or form, like plants, animals, elements of God? Because that's kind of what I read. And kind of your general belief in demons.
Well, I don't use the term demon. Now, I'm not saying that, you know, and I will say things that are different from James Long, and it doesn't mean I disagree with him. It's just I have a different way of looking at a different terminology, a different life,
yeah.
You know, a different story. My theology is a different story than James's. But, you know,
and that's why
I
we like to get
things,
all the different angles.
Sure, sure. I tend to see things in shades of energy. And like I said, I don't tend to tag it. Now, it depends. I mean, there's many, so many different shamanic traditions. I mean, you know, in the United States, you have 500 different Indian tribes, and there's, you know, there's different shamanic traditions in each one. I mean, there might be some similarities. I have never practiced in a tradition where they specifically named something like a demon. I have seen some traditions in the Navajo, they say that, actually this is rather interesting, but it's coyote, you know, is one that's going to tempt you and get you to do bad things, you know. That's the you know, they say coyote waits for those who are gonna mess up, and so that would be like a spirit type of a thing that could lead you astray, so to speak. But mostly you have tricksters, Iktomi, you know, the Spider Man in the Sioux tradition, and Raven in the Northwest Coast. Excuse me, but as far as demons as and of themselves, as they are described biblically, I would say no, I do not use that term, nor that does not fall into my belief system. So, I believe in entities and go ahead.
I've heard that in a shamanic that it's kind of labeled either good or evil. Is that accurate?
You can label it that way.
Like not demonic, but just evil or good.
Evil by action. You know, it's like we all have energy, and we all know you take like atomic energy. Atomic energy can be very beneficial in some cases if they can keep it contained and not, you know what I'm saying. It can be beneficial, but it also can destroy the planet. So you have energy, which can be used as in the light or in the dark. It's like any type. Like there are people who might practice a dark side of shamanism or dark sides of magic in the Wiccan and the magic folks. It's just a matter of how you use it. Now, we have a saying, a lot of people have a saying that says, as in life, so in death. So if you are evil in life, you go to the spirit world, and you may continue to do what we would call evil things. You know, the word evil is always kind of fun to play with because, you know, what defines evil? And so one man's evil is another man's good. Now, we generally as a culture have it, you know, pretty much, you know, decide what's evil and what's good. But we can look at the acts. I mean, like you take something, a spirit that's causing, let's say, throwing stuff around in somebody's house, causing havoc. Somebody, a spirit who's attached to somebody during an investigation, which I've seen that happen. And actually, a friend of ours in the chat room, Vic Furman, and I witnessed that at the Haunted Hill House and when we were in Texas and saw
Mineral Wells
affected like that at Mineral Wells, right? And so yeah, I mean, I've seen it in action in that form, and then you respond to that accordingly. With me, I'm not saying, well, it's a demon. It's just like to me, okay, it's negative energy. It could be very passive. It could be very strong. You know, there's certain different gradients of strength, but you just have to deal with it. And I mean, in my mind's eye, in my vocabulary, I'm saying this is negative energy that needs to be dealt with accordingly because it was hurting.
Right.
It's hurting somebody.
Well, I have a question for you about what are skinwalkers? And have you come across them?
No. Skinwalkers, I have never come across skinwalkers. Skinwalkers are, I saw that question in chat from Vic. A skinwalker is like a medicine person, and this is basically in the Southwest. They say they're shape changers that will do, they basically curse people. They will do evil things to people. They bring bad luck to people. They're very feared in the Diné or the Navajo as causers of, you know, of evil acts. And they today, you know, they, you know, somebody, if somebody thinks somebody's a skinwalker, they're liable to shoot them or something like that. But yeah, the skinwalker is like a black shaman, so to speak, or a shaman who does evil things. They have their own medicine, like their own medicine tradition. Now, I say the word medicine, I mean that's spiritual power. And they take it and they turn it twisted evil. You can take anything and twist it to evil purposes. Almost any type of spiritual path. You can, you know, or spiritual action. You know, rites of, you know, of spells or incantations or spiritual ceremonies. You can turn them dark, and then make dark acts happen from that. But yeah, skinwalkers are like, they're like negative shaman.
Okay, okay. Well, and here's a question from a novice here. I have no idea. And I'm sure that there are some people out there, too, that may be asking this question. What exactly is a shaman?
That's a real good question. A shaman is somebody who works with the spirits to help the people in a very basic sense. They tend to have, you know, I call myself a shamanic practitioner. I've been taught in a couple different shamanic traditions in the Lakota way, and also in the Northwest Coast, the Tsleil-Waututh medicine tradition. And basically, we use our medicine, our spiritual power, and we use it to heal ourselves and to heal other people. You want, and it sounds conceited, but no, you always want to heal yourself first, because if you don't do that, then you could be sick and you're trying to heal other people and it doesn't work. But we take that energy and whatever our calling is with that, with our medicine, we do that. But a shaman specifically will work with the spirits on behalf of the people. If I'm trying to work on healing, I will go into like a trance and bring the spirits in and try to communicate with them, tell me what to do. If I'm on a paranormal investigation, same thing. I will connect with the spirits. Uh-huh. How do I need to deal with this? I never know what I'm going to do until I get there. I get a bag full of stuff, my shamanic tools, and I don't know what I'm going to do until something pops up. Then I'll go in, you know, I can go in real quick. Okay, what do I need to do? I'm told what to do, and I act from there. I don't have a pre-prescribed, like, rite of exorcism or anything like that, like James and the guys like that do. But I just work for spirit, and spirit tells me what to do. And that's how it works. That's how shamans work. Now, some of them have very specific rites, very specific ceremonies. The medicine tradition I follow has some of those, but it tends to be a little bit more eclectic. And that's more me. I'm definitely not a rule follower very much. So I tend to make, you know, I have certain things that I do, but I never know exactly what I'm going to do till I get there. And that's why I like the tradition I'm in now, because I'm a member of the Red Cedar Circle of southwestern Illinois, and that follows the Tsleil-Waututh medicine tradition of Northwest Coast. And so that's my shamanic background. But that's basically what a shaman does, is that they work with spirits, work with the energy of spirit, and heal themselves and heal others in whatever way you can.
Awesome. Well, you're my first shamanic worker that I've ever met. So,
oh, cool.
Nice to meet you, Chris.
Nice to meet you, Star. Hey, and you know, we're all different. Believe me. People think, you know, you think of the word shamans, like everybody's just saying, oh my goodness, there's so many different types of people.
Yeah.
Some are much more serious than I am, but I am, you know, I am Coyote, and that's just how I am. I, you know, I laugh a lot, I joke a lot, but when stuff gets serious, I get serious, and
right.
That's how it rolls. But I like to have fun. You know, I do what I do.
When it comes to this show, that's what we're trying to do with, you know, we've changed the show to where we're approaching topics and not interviewing people specifically, but topics. And educating on topics, but we're trying to hit at different angles. And that's why, you know, we did Bishop Long, but then also you, because you all experience this, but we want to know how you all approach it from different angles and different different practices. So I think that's really good for people to see. And you get out there and you have cases where, you know, you'll have a client that says, I want a shaman. I don't want a priest, or I don't want this, or I don't want that. So you have to be able to cater to those people and understand what they need and want and understand everything and have some background on that. So
agreed.
Definitely. Yeah. So that's kind of part of
And I might not be your guy either, you know, and I always look at that. If somebody, you know, last talks to me and I'm like, you know, I'll be real honest with them. I say, you might want so-and-so. You know, because that's what it's about. It's about helping people. It's not about my ego. I agree with what you're saying. Everybody should be exposed to different thought points of view on how to deal with these things. And you pick what you're comfortable with, and that's definitely the way to go about it.
Right. Now, I've seen postings where people say, and you know, it's not my opinion, but I just toss it out there and get your opinion and your response on it. They say that demons can be, or they say can demons be summoned through drumming and rattling, etc. And what, I don't know what you would say to that. Obviously, I wouldn't
think you could
do that intentional, but
no way you could do it
possible.
Be intentional. You know, people, anybody that says that just by doing a specific act, like playing with a Ouija board, is going to summon a demon or a negative spirit. At least in my opinion. Now, if I'm drumming, all it is it. Now, the noise can attract spirits, that's for sure. But unless you call for them specifically, then no. I mean, it's just the act of drumming or rattling. Some people put that out there because they're just, I think they're against this type of you know, worship or theology or spirituality.
Yeah. Or just
so,
ignorance,
you know, like,
maybe,
you know,
lack of knowledge.
Yeah. Yeah, you're not doing it the way I'm doing it, so ergo you must be evil, which is not true. But you can take anything and summon, you know, there might be some things like they're specifically just good, you know, things are just of good that you cannot summon a negative spirit with, I imagine, you know, crucifix, stuff like that. I mean, sage, of course, would negate it. Holy water, that type of stuff, you know, and it's because it's what it's used for, and you know, it's not used for that type of thing. But you could probably take a drum and do it if you really wanted to. I don't know why you would. I mean, anybody that, you know, wants to conjure up the dark side is a fool, but I've known enough of the people to do it. So, you know, but yeah, as far as, you know, inadvertently summoning, you know, the Prince of Darkness by drumming or rattling or whatnot, or chanting or singing. Basically, when you're doing that, you're attracting spirits, but usually what you're doing is you're asking for your spirit guides to come to you. Or in another case, you're actually, especially with drumming over a long period of time, you're doing a journey. And journey is one of the ways you reach your spirit helpers or reach the spirit world. Sort of an in-between place, so to speak, I would say, where you can meet with the people, the guides that help you, be they animal or people or whatever. And it creates like a trance state when you do it. It activates beta waves in your brain, suppresses the alpha waves, brings up the beta waves, and allows you. It's some people might call it spirit traveling, stuff like that. I call it journeying. And that's when you go and you if you need some help with things and you have a purpose for needing to talk to them, that's what you do.
Okay. Well, Chris, let me ask you this. Say you go into a place and you said that you go into a trance when you connect with or speak with spirits. Who are these spirits that you do connect with? Are they human? Are they inhuman? What are they?
Well, they tend to be human and animal. Now, and it's like spirit guides tend to be unique to each person. And what I mean by that is, like, if I have, like, one of my spirit guides, I can say, is my great-great-grandmother. There's also another spirit that I know of. I can't speak the name, but that I know about that I've seen. They tend to be, you know, like, but they normally would not be spirit guides for other people. I also have spirit animals and the bear, the hawk, the coyote, obviously. So those would represent different parts of me. But I tend to see them, you know, around here, except for bears. Obviously, I've seen bears in visions before. And actually, bear is my healing animal. If I'm doing a healing, I think of bear. And bear brought me that medicine in a vision. And so they tend to be, but the what we would call human ones, I guess you could call it that. Some people might refer to them as angels. They're kind of a rung up from humans. They've gone to spirit, and I can't – one or two, I mean, I know that they are in human form. I do know that. I know they're benevolent, that they're here to help me. But can I say that they are human? I don't know. If they come in, my great-great-grandmother was human. I've seen a picture of her. After I met her when I was 5 years old, and then she was already dead, and that was a strange day later on when I realized who it was. But yeah, I mean, they can be different. They're different for different people, Everybody's got a different set of spirit guides. You can share animals, that's fine, but usually you don't have the same ones, each person.
Okay, Lisa, go ahead. Well, I was just going to say, I went on a trip not too long ago, and I've always been partial to owls. They've always been a part of my life. And I went on a trip not too long ago, and on the way there, I was going to Dodge City, and on the way there, I saw three owls probably about 10 miles apart, and they all just watched me as I went by, as I drove by them. And that was just it was kind of neat, but it was really strange to me, too, because I'm not used to seeing that very many owls. And they're watching me, too. So
yeah, I would take that as a sign. I mean, in my world, I mean, it's like owls trying to talk to me. Now, some cultures, like in the at least they were just sitting there watching. If they're doing dances and stuff like that, it means somebody's going to die in some cultures. I don't know if that's absolutely true or not, but but yeah. Well, they say down in the Southwest, the Zuni keep an owl by the door because it keeps the Navajo out. So I guess they don't get along. But but you know, my sister has owl medicine too, or she's attracted to owls, and so. What I would do with that is keep a lookout for them some more. But, you know, owls can be about wisdom and strength and things like that. But birds are also messengers from spirit because, obviously they fly. And so spirit might be trying to contact you too. What I would do, and I can look, I'm going to tell you what I tell everybody else. Google owl medicine or owl totem and see what it comes up. Because they're all about, all the information, they're still different for different cultures. Just kind of take a look at it and see what speaks to you. Your heart will tell you what's the right definition. And that's what matters the most, is what feels like is right. Now, there's books out there, it's got to be this, it's got to be that. No, because they're different in different traditions. And so, what fits for you.
I would do exactly like he said, because he helped me when I had this dream and this vision and everything, and I was able to look it up and everything. We looks like we are wrapping down suddenly, but I wanted to find out before we go out with some music where you're going to be, because nowadays you're picking up some events, it seems. I want to find out. Where you're going to be, where people can find you, your website, your events, anything that you want to throw out there, go for it. And we've got more than the timer says, so just ignore it because it'll keep recording.
Okay, cool. Let's see now. I do a lot of events in here in the Alton, Illinois area. And you can catch those on my website, and that's www.coyotechris.com. In March, thankfully, looks like I'm going to Florida, to Cross City, Florida. And there's a cool lodge there, and I forget the name of it. It's on my website. I forget the name of it. But there's a lodge there that's got like a hanging tree in the back, and it's never been officially investigated. And we're going to do an event there, and a paranormal symposium with Chris Moon's going to be there. Chris Moon's going to be there, and Lee Ehrlich. Yeah, I'm not sure who else yet. The first weekend in June, I'll be in Excelsior Springs, Missouri, at a con there. We haven't named it. She hasn't been named yet. I just know I'm supposed to be there. In August, first weekend of August, I'll be at the Kansas City Paranormal Convention, which is always a good time. It's pretty cheap getting into, good bunch of folks. I will be at the SenseSil Con in Illinois. In September, I'll be there with my buddy James Anito, and we're both members of the Dominion Ministry, that goes out and helps people fight off, who have problems. I shouldn't say fight off necessarily, but, who have problems with negative energies and things like that. And so, real large group.
Shout out to Anito and Vic for being in chat and everybody else that has joined us. We really appreciate that. Okay, with that, we're going to go ahead and go out with some music. We're going to use did you have something real quick?
Sorry. Yeah, I've got one more question that was asked on chat.
Oh, in chat.
And, they asked, how do your spirit guides, Chris, how do your spirit guides assist you?
It's funny. they will assist you in ways that you don't expect. Because a lot of times you know, if you're journeying or even having visions, or even sometimes you're dreaming, you might see them and they might say something, or you feel, a lot of times you feel what they mean, and you take that. There have been times when I'll be doing like a healing, all of a sudden I'll feel, and really almost I can see the energy shimmer of one of my guides. I can tell which one it is, and they'll come and stand by your shoulder as you bring in the light to the people. And it's just, they'll be there, and they give you that extra energy, the extra strength. They'll come at really cool times, too. Like one time, this was many, many years ago, I was giving my daughter probably her last bath of her, you know, because Daddy was getting too old. Or she was getting too old, and Dad, you know, one time for Daddy to wash her anymore. And I felt my great-great-grandmother come in, and I felt this energy come up almost to my elbows on each hand. I'm like, what do you want? I mean, I knew it was. I'm always tickled when she comes by. Well, she wanted to wash my daughter's hair. And so she got, you know, and I let her, you know, and we washed the hair together, and she just had a grand old time. But, you know, it's just little things like that will happen and bring strength to the situation. And I'm sure passed on energy to my daughter, who's almost 25 now, and she has talents of her own, as does my son. And so, yeah, it's just, they'll just do cool things like that. And sometimes you want them to show up and they won't, you know. They figure, oh, nope, you need to deal with that on your own, son. And that's what will happen. And they're the boss. They decide. He's like, okay, you know, I understand. So anytime they do come in and help you, it's a blessing. But you know, they're always there, and they're there if you call for them, unless you need your butt kicked, and that's the case. But it's fun. It's a different way of looking at things than a lot of people know. But I'm a normal person. I really am. That just happened to get into this. You know, well, I shouldn't say I just got into it. Spirit brought me into it. And I don't regret a minute of it. And it's just like, but you know, I still watch sports. I still have a beer, you know, I'm still the same Chris Sutton that I always was. It's just, this is my spirit. This is myself. This is my life. And I live that, I try to live that accordingly. And, you know, once you start, you know, you taking the medicine path, you're on it. And generally you stay with it. Because, you know, once you understand what it's about and it's about helping others, then that just makes it so much cooler. You know, it's not about me. It's about people and about the spirit.
Yes. Couldn't have said it better. Well, Chris, thank you for coming on. I really appreciate you joining me again. This is the second time. And like I said, I enjoy having you as a guest and could have you on many more times. There's so much to talk
about.
Lisa,
it's always a pleasure, dear, and it's been too long since we've seen each other. We'll have to catch up sometime. Star, it's great to meet you. Hopefully, you know, we'll meet up sometime, too.
Absolutely. Yes. I know we're friends on Facebook, but one of these days we'll meet face-to-face.
Yes, at some event. So we're going to go on out with Sean Austin, which is a paranormal investigator. I'd love to share his music. And that song is called How I Want You So Bad. So we will talk to you later, Chris. Thanks again. And see you guys next
week.
Take
care. Good night.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Good night, guys.
Never thought I'd see it. The end of the deep inner search. Like a picture taken in mind.